Once you have that understanding of their primary business issue, the number one thing they're focused on, their view of the problems and their view of the solution, you have what we call a vision match, which anybody can get. It's basically the sound of one hand clapping.
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Sell or Die podcast, the global premier personal development and sales podcast on the planet. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling and my newest book, The Sales Manifesto.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, author of Sales in a New York Minute. We are interviewing leaders in business, sales, and personal development to give you the strategies it takes to make more sales and make more money.
Strategies that you can take out into the street and turn into money 1 minute after you hear them.
In a manifesto moment?
Well, no, more like in a New York Minute.
Oh, then. Thank you to all the diehards out there supporting us with listens and five-star reviews.
Be a star on Sell or Die. Leave your own review. Come on. Go to your computer right now. Go to iTunes right now and write down, type down, talk down exactly how you feel about this podcast and how it might affect others.
All right. I want you to enjoy today's show. Take notes and tell us what you think on our Sell or Die Hard official Facebook group.
All right, let's get to it. It's time to sell or die. Diehards. Today's guest is Chad Sanderson. He has been leading and been a leading sales and marketing teams to success. You got that? Success. You know what that means? Orders and business for more than 20 years. He has a proven, predictable value selling framework. Chad is a no BS, which if you're not from New Jersey, is no bullshit, raw and focused on tell you what's working and what's not working in your sales process. Please welcome the great Chad Sanderson.
Woo, Chad, we're glad you're here.
Pleasure to be here. Pleasure
awesome.
To be here.
But you like all of us, have moved out of New Jersey, correct?
Yeah.
You're not.
Oh hell yeah! I got out a long time ago. I got out of the geography. I just didn't ever lost the attitude.
Exactly. Exactly.
Part of my charm.
You can't lose it. Yeah. No. Well, part of your charm to us. Other people are uncharmed.
You know,
yeah,
now that
I'm not for everybody.
Now that I'm here, I feel like I'm nice. And if you really piss me off, like after a couple of nice trying really hard, yeah. I go Jersey.
Right, exactly. I'm my philosophy of how
I'm going Jersey.
My philosophy of how I treat people now is friendly Jersey.
Oh, you only have two friendlies.
I give you
like four or five, and yeah. Then I go Jersey. But you do not want me to go Jersey on you.
Right, exactly.
So, talk
to us about the value selling framework, because I have been a value provider for an extended period of time, and our diehards, our listeners, all want to understand what value selling.
Whoa, we're going right there.
Do you mind?
Oh no. I want to know like how he got into sales.
Oh. But, all right.
All right. Well, we'll start with the easy stuff. So,
okay.
My first exposure to sales was actually, you know, drum roll, please, selling Cutco knives
Same with Jen.
Me too.
College. Yeah. I walked in, you know, and I thought, all right, well, this can't be that hard. And then the guy in there is like, hey, you know, you think these knives are extremely expensive, but like $100 to you is not $100 to the people that you're selling to. So it's about the value that you can provide to them. And so I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. I was successful at that, got my degree, and then went into marketing thinking, this is probably going to be a little bit easier. But after spending 9 years in marketing, running global marketing teams, I looked at the sales team and I went, you know, these guys are making a shit ton of money.
Right, exactly.
They're not smarter.
Hello.
Right. They're not smarter. So I walked in, I think 2 days after I got my MBA in marketing, I walked into the VP of Worldwide Sales office. He had just fired a guy that owned the Western U.S. and South America territory. It hadn't hit its number in like that whole territory hadn't hit its number in 7 years. And I said, you know, I'm pretty sure I can do a better job at this. And so I was actually lucky enough. You know, he gave me the whole spiel. You know, look, it's sales. It's not marketing. So it's very cut and dry. You're either doing it or you're not. I'm like, yeah, you know, I've worked with your team for a couple of years now. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be smarter than most of them. But so let's, you know, give it a shot. I'm not, you know, not. This is the jersey coming out, right?
Yeah.
And if you ask me, I'm still friends with him today, 17 years later, 18 years later.
Well, that means you hit the number though, right?
Oh yeah. In 18 months, we turned that territory around into the top performing territory for the organization. We closed one of the largest deals in the history of the company. And it was because I was lucky enough to be trained by a gentleman named Rick Makinich in the value selling framework. Now, as I tell our CEO, I'm not a big fan of the name value selling framework because it's very generic. But essentially, it was a predictable conversational model so that I could uncover another person's perspective of value. Rather than me walking in going, hey, check out these cool knives I got. You want these? Look, I can cut a penny in half with these scissors. This is about me asking questions and carefully crafting the questions to uncover their perspective and then connect what we did in a unique fashion to that. So it was much more collaborative in nature, and it made my career. I was a top performer carrying a bag and then started leading teams. And every company I went to, I brought in Rick Makinich, and he trained our team, trains our organizations in the value selling framework. We've trained salespeople, project managers, consultants. I've trained graphic designers, data scientists, because it's about uncovering another human being's perspective. And so 3 years ago, Rick reached out to me after I spent 10 years in the digital space, digital agency space. And we sold the company to KPMG and did all that stuff. And then Rick calls me and says, hey, you need to come do this. And I'm like, I don't know. Sounds cute, but I'm not 100% sure. He's like, you're really passionate about it. You should come do it. And so I spent 6 months going through numbers and figuring out if I wanted to start my own gig, and made the decision and haven't looked back. And it's been a roller coaster for 3 years, but we get to work with companies, you know, from Adobe to digital guys like Bounteous, to people that sell paper cups. And like I said, as we were warming up, you know, nuclear reactors. So
Wow. It's
great from a diversity standpoint. And the common core theme across all of it is, thank you, millennials, for being brought up with screens attached to your faces. Don't know how to have conversations. And
yeah.
So
yeah, the big money making opportunity.
Yeah.
Okay, now
it's been really successful.
I want to know that when you say, and you're on stage and you're saying, I work with nuclear reactors, do you like hold your hand up and it's a duck bill or something?
No, that'd be pretty cool though. If I could pull that off, that'd be cool.
We even work with nuclear companies, and you had your hand behind your back and now it's like a
oh boy.
I'd probably end up on America's Got Talent if I could do that.
For sure.
I'm telling you, I think that it would work. Humor sells as much as value.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, if you can't connect, if you can't have a relationship with another human being that's built on credibility, trust, and rapport, then what the hell are you doing? Right?
But, diehards get this now. Here's a guy who understands the value of value. And he's going to be able to communicate that value in a way that the customer perceives it's valuable. And that's the key.
Absolutely.
If you think it's valuable and the customer doesn't think it's valuable, it ain't valuable.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. Yeah. No. It's amazing when we work with clients, and we've got, you know, I did a workshop 2 weeks ago, and I had people that had been selling for 30 years and I had people that had been selling for 5. And we start talking about this stuff, and I ask them, I said, I don't want anybody to cry. I mean, I've got tissues, but if, you know, don't cry. But when you walk into a client site, how much value are you bringing through the door? And they all start, you know, riffing on, oh, we do this and we do that. And I'm like, that's great. But you absolutely bring nothing through the door when you come in if you can't get the perspective from the person you're talking to. And it's kind of it's a subtle shift. It's really subtle. But once you get it, it opens up a whole bunch of possibilities in terms of revenue generation.
So walk us through the value selling framework, which is very clunky to say.
It is. Yeah, it is. Trust me. And I know when our CEO listens to this, she's going to be, oh, here he goes again. I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of the name. I get why it's there. But essentially, if you think about it, you know, there's methodologies out the wazoo out there, right? And when I got trained in value selling, it was, I think, 93 days till I closed my first $1 million deal, 125 days till I closed my first multi-$1 million deal. And I thought, well, hell, if this is good, I'm going to go check out everything. So I did see Challenger and customer centric. I went through it all. And there's good things in all of them, right? There's things that you can take away from all of them. But I'm just going to be completely 100% unfiltered Jersey honest and say, I'm not doing all that damn overhead.
Yeah.
If I'm a sales guy, if I'm selling, then I want to be selling. I don't want to be filling out paperwork. I don't have time for that. I got a number to exceed.
Wait a minute. You don't want to challenge the CEO of a Fortune 500 company when you're a 26-year-old kid about his thinking as well? I don't get that.
Yeah, that tends balls? To go the wrong way. Yeah. Anyway, great. Keep going.
So I'll send you guys, so you can put it in the show notes. I'll send you a picture of the primary tool that we use. It's called a value prompter. And it's a prompter because it's designed to make sure we remain consciously competent in a conversation. Most people go in and if you think about how a conversation unfolds, if you were to map it in any way, shape, form, or fashion, it looks like somebody just tipped over a big old, you know, pot of pasta. It's all over the damn place. Sometimes they're talking about problems they got. Sometimes they're talking about what they want in the solution. Maybe they jump to personal value. Maybe they start talking about other people that are involved. It goes all over the place. It becomes very difficult to capture in a predictable way the information that you need. And so the value prompter is designed. It is, I call it the Leatherman, the multi-tool of sales enablement assets. It can be used to prep for a call, debrief a call. We have clients using it for quarterly business review readouts, internal executive alignment. And basically, it is a prompter designed to help you uncover the number one thing that that individual is focused on in order to contribute to an overriding business objective. So every business has, you know, I want to be 20 billion by 2020 or some cute little saying like that, right? And you know, it's great. The organizations, they'll have objectives, but the people have issues and they have issues they have to address. We call that a business issue. And so every individual in an organization is going to have a different view of the problems they have to solve and the value they want in order to contribute to that overriding business objective. And it's easy, it's somewhat easy to think about if you understand how business works. If you're going after a CMO, what could they have been tasked with if revenue increase is the top, you know, is their top business objective? Maybe it's a 10% increase in leads across all digital channels in the next fiscal year. It's time bound. I've got a fiscal year and it's quantifiable, 10%. That's their business issue. And then they'll start talking about their problems. What are the problems keeping them from accomplishing that? And then you ask them, what do you want to see in the solution? Because you've obviously, you have access to this thing called the Google. And so you instantly think, you know, you can get all of the answers. So you want to uncover what they think the solution is. Now, you challenge their thinking and expand their vision by asking questions. We have a statement that that Rick McEnich came up with. Statements create conflict and questions uncover solutions. Once you have that understanding of their primary business issue, the number one thing they're focused on, their view of the problems and their view of the solution, you have what we call a vision match, which anybody can get. It's basically the sound of one hand clapping. We then use open, probe, and confirm questions to expand out their view of the problem and solution set, and then ask them to confirm that problems we know we can uniquely solve are going to provide value. But we want them to tell us how are they going to quantify that impact to the organization. So it's their perception of value. They're walking us through, we're guiding them with questions. And then it's the typical, who else is involved or impacted? What's your buying process? And then let's put together a mutual plan, not to contract signing, not to implementation, but all the way out to that point in time where you had to realize the value that made you purchase in the first place. It is a very elegant 5-6 boxes that literally you carry around. I have them all over the place on the back of my computers. And it's literally to make sure I don't forget anything. Because guess what? Everybody is living lives and maybe you have a crappy day. Maybe it was the day I got served with the second set of divorce papers. I don't know. Maybe it's a bad day.
Second or third?
Second.
Got it. Okay, cool.
can only afford two.
They go up in value.
Yeah, they go up in cost. Yeah. And they do go up in value. That's true. But if you have a bad day, we need something that's going to help us make sure we're bringing the best version of ourselves to the table every time we have those conversations. This framework allows you to do it and to quickly self-inspect a deal with what we call the QP formula. It's literally four questions. Do you have a vision match, meaning understand their business issue, problem, and solution? Do you understand their view of value? Do you understand their view of the buying process and power? And what is your plan to get them to that point in the future? So it's all multiplied. So QP equals vision match, differentiated times value times power times plan. Four questions, no storytelling. and you can determine where you are and where your gaps are in an account, and you can do it fast. You can do it yourself. You can do it with your managers, and it allows a speed and consistency, which is what we're after. Consistent sales behavior make the difference in all of the data and research that we've seen.
Fascinating, and I hate to say this, but accurate.
Oh, crap, he was actually right.
Well, the bottom line is that most people have a set of slides that were given to them by a marketing team in a big company. Yep. And those slides are, I would say, boring, but I don't want to be that inarticulate. They're fucking boring. And the salesperson is forced to go into a sales call and use this set of slides rather than my recommendation, which is send them a day in advance.
Right.
And tell the customer, I'm going to be coming there to talk about you with the ideas that I have so that we can really reach some kind of conclusion about the outcome that you desire, which incorporates the value. I mean, that's the whole deal.
It is. It's a whole ball of wax.
So, okay. At my former company, we implemented a sales strategy methodology kind of thing. I'm not going to say which one. And what I found...
What does it rhyme with?
It wasn't this one, the clunky name, value selling framework, which I actually like the what it is, but yes, it wasn't that. Anyway, what I noticed was that reps got trained on this, and then they felt like they had this process. And before they would even get into talking about how they could help or whatever it may be, they were sitting there asking like 500 questions to the point where like I had to stop sales meetings because the buyer looked so much in pain and overwhelmed. And like, why are you grilling me with 3,000 questions? So I think like these kind of strategies are really good, but how do you transfer this strategy in a way where the salesperson is still human on the sales call and doesn't feel like they're having to follow this process and stay in this box, but really they can be in a conversation with the client the whole time?
All right. So Gong.io has this massive database of recorded sales calls, and they did a bunch of analysis against it to see what was working and what wasn't. And it turns out you can ask between 7 to 9, maybe 11 questions of an SVP role before you get to a point where you're introducing friction. And what we want to do is remove friction from the sales process. Now, if you get higher, you can ask 3 to 4 questions. So if all you have are 3 to 4 questions that you can ask, or 7 to 11, and you walk in and you show up and throw up and just make the shit up as you go, what are the chances that you're going to be successful? Pretty much nil. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Because you got to do the prep. But what I'm not going to, as I said earlier, I'm not going to do exhaustive. I need something that's going to help me be efficient, consistent, and not introduce friction in the sales process. So we want to craft very specific probing questions in a way that helps expand out the view that the person is providing us. So let's go back to that CMO example. I need 10% increase in leads in this fiscal year.
Yeah.
And you get them to tell you that. And you say, okay, so what are the problems that are getting in the way? And they say, well, you know, I've got a team that's just kind of all over the place, and our process really doesn't allow for a quick response. And you know, I need to solve those two things. Excellent. Could you be struggling with having multiple elements in your tech stack, that even technology that maybe you're not using or your team doesn't know how to use? Yeah, that's a problem too. Okay, so what I did was just expand out. He gave me two problems, or she gave me two problems. I put one more in the box. I know I can solve that. And that's the questions. Those are the questions that I'm putting in the value prompter to make sure I ask. The rest of it is just a conversational GPS. So the thing that that really resonates with me about value selling is that we don't produce cookie cutter, you know, I used to say IBM, but I won't say that. We don't produce the cookie cutter, blue shirt, khaki wearing BMW driving salespeople. This is a framework that allows them to be them, to have a conversation and ensure that they are doing it in a way that reduces friction and uncovers the other person's perspective.
I love that. So can you tell us, you talked about how it helped you land a $1 million deal and then a multiple. Yep. Can you tell us that story and how you used it?
Yeah, sure. Even though you don't tell stories when you sell.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, and in fact, our whole thing is like, let's get rid of the storytelling. But
hang on a second. We have connected by story. When you first got on the phone with us today,
yes,
it was the stories
absolutely
that connected us.
Yeah,
it was absolutely New Jersey. It was what exit? It's exit one. All the things that made you feel comfortable enough to have a meaningful yes dialogue. Now,
well, and I'm not talking about getting rid of the story with the prospect.
I'm not done yet. You happen to have a very viable process.
Yep.
And it's not find the fucking pain. It's not challenge me on the shit that I've got. It's an actual value-driven process that can lead to a sale. You leave absolutely out an important word. The word is outcome, but we'll get to that later because you're calling it a solution rather than an outcome. And I don't want a solution. I want an outcome. I want to know what's going to happen after I do this. I want to know where I go to get the beer. I want to know how right I'm going to celebrate. Okay, but you have to do it, in my opinion, by making this dialogue conversational and connectable.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
If I don't connect with you, I want to I like you. Yes, you're bald. Yes, you've been through a couple of divorces. We have those things in common. But the bottom line is we have to connect intellectually and emotionally, yeah, or it ain't a deal.
Jeffrey, what's that in your coffee cup?
What do you think it is, Jen? It's Death Wish Coffee. It's the only coffee I drink. Death Wish is the world's strongest coffee, and the world's strongest salesperson needs the world's strongest coffee.
Jeffrey and I drink it, and diehards, you need to be drinking it too. It'll help you wake up and smell the order forms. They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee, so go get your first bag or first box of K-Cups of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
So what does an order form smell like? Okay, so
it is 100%. So let me clarify. So what we want to do is you have to tell stories, you have to connect with the individuals and that you're selling to. But as a sales manager, when I say, hey, how's that deal going? I don't want to hear, hey, I had coffee with Mark and Mark's kids play on the same soccer team as me and this deal's going to happen. I don't want to hear that. Mm. I want the storytelling out of the deal reviews internally. And I need a framework that's going to allow me to be an individual and connect with the stories that I bring, which is what we're talking about.
I agree. Because yes, when a sales guy comes back, he goes, oh, I had a great conversation. Did he get the contract? Well, no.
They have great coffee. We went to a great coffee place.
Yeah, yeah. We had a great convo. He's in. He's in.
Yeah.
You have a contract? Thursday. You have a check? Because that's really all the sales manager yeah gives a shit about. Where's the contract? Where's the money?
Exactly. So internally, that QP formula allows us to remove the storytelling sales reps have a tendency to do on deals internally. But when we're dealing externally, it's about how do I remain authentic? How do I bring me into the conversation? So the setting the stage and setting the stories, that's part of what the value prompter allows, because every individual is going to bring something different. Now, you went to the word outcome. In our parlance, that would be value. So the value for us is you need a solution that's going to generate the value, the outcome. So did I get 10% increase in my sales if we're using that CMO, or leads if we're using that CMO example? And then the other aspect of that is what's the personal value? So it's not just about the business value. It's about the personal value for the individual. People make emotional buying decisions and justify it with logic all the time. I could tell you that I have a ridiculously expensive Harley Davidson because it goes through traffic in Denver like nobody's business. The fact of the matter is I'm 6'2", 250 pounds and just look damn good on a Harley. But I'll justify it with logic day in and day out. And so that value component is not just about the value to the business. It's the value to the individual.
All right. Let me challenge you with something.
Okay.
Mr. Jersey smartass. The outcome is not about achieving the 10%. The outcome is about what happens after I get those leads. What am I gonna reap as a result of you fulfilling, I need 10% more leads? That's outcome. And that
I think we're saying very similar things.
Yeah. I think you are. You're just calling it different things.
No, I'm challenging his fucking ass.
Oh, okay. Yes. Jeffrey's right.
But no, I mean, it is. I get what you're saying. It's more than that, right? But remember, the business issues are generated by the overriding business objective. So if the business objective was, you know, revenue, then basically the outcome becomes, hey, if marketing can produce 10% in new leads across all the digital platforms, we'll hit the revenue targets we need to go to IPO, which is going to get me my payout or something like that.
Yeah, no argument with that. But how many times have you heard a salesperson say, if you can get me in front of this buyer, I can close that sale 90% of the time? Have you ever heard that bullshit?
I hear it all the time.
Yeah.
Exactly. So the challenge, the challenge is, I think that if somebody wants 10% more leads, you can say, okay, what's going to happen when you get them?
So are you going, you could, I mean, if, and that's a great question to ask if that's not the primary thing they're focused on.
You maybe don't know that if you don't, If you, you know, like I got to get into my salespeople and okay, so what's the process that they're going to use to convert? Well, they're going to use the same thing they use right now. Well, how great is that?
I think, right. Jeffrey, you're trying to understand at a deeper level what their real why is, like why they really want to buy this thing,
Jen,
whatever it is.
That's why I married you.
And and I think with the value selling framework, it sounds like they're thinking about the fact that you might only have 3 to 4 questions that you can ask.
No argument. The reason I'm challenging Chad, it's fucking brilliant.
I mean, but here's the real question, okay? If you only have 3 to 4 questions, use one of those 3 to 4 questions to find out their deeper why?
And the reason I would ask that question is because it's going to reveal everything beneath it.
So then you're saying you would?
Yes, I would. I'd blow one of my questions on, when you get all these leads, what's going to happen? And well, then he explains everything.
Yeah.
That becomes, in our parlance, that becomes the business issue. What is the thing you're focused on? What is the outcome you're looking for, and when do you need to get it? That's the time-bound, quantifiable piece of it. Yes. Time-bound, quantifiable. Because most people be able to tell you why they want something. But if you don't have a time frame within which they want it, and you can't quantify some type of impact, you have no ability to control urgency in a sales
process. No argument. No argument whatsoever. But when I find out why, I can find out when.
Yes.
And if I only
is like two guys at the pizza parlor in Jersey saying the same shit.
Yeah, this is so fun for me to watch.
Let me explain something. All of our salespeople want to find out when they can get the business because their quota, their boss has a foot up their ass, and that's the wrong question if you don't know why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the why is going to dictate the passion that's involved in it. That's the emotional part. The why is the emotion. The when is the logic.
So it sounds like we agree to agree.
Yeah. We do.
Absolutely.
I love it. Okay, tell us about that $1 million sale.
Yeah, come on. I want the story.
Okay. So when we, I won't name the name of the company, but it's a water jet manufacturing company.
Okay.
And so when.
I know who it is.
When you work with the value prompter, the first field on the value prompter is contact. So there, we have different versions of it, so you can do it for accounts in total. But each individual involved in the buying process is going to have a different view of the thing they want, their why, the problems as they see them, and what they think the solution should be, mm-hmm. as well as how they're going to impact it. So I used the value prompter literally 2 or 3 weeks after training. I did. I set it up. I had my pre-call prompter done. I knew what questions I was going to ask. And I specifically had started to ask this director of IT a couple of questions he couldn't answer. And he looked at me and he said, you know what? Those are really good questions. Let me go get the CEO. And now I'm young at this point. So I'm trying not to, you know, piss myself. And I have my VP with me, right? And I look at him and I'm like, wow, this stuff really works. And in comes the CEO. And we start to ask those same questions. And because we asked questions that were around their perspectives of it, what was making their business, he then said, okay, you need to talk to marketing over here and you're going to have to talk to procurement. Basically laid out the buying process. And then in advance of each meeting, I just made sure I had questions, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 questions inside the value prompter to help me uncover each of those individuals' perspectives. Like when you get to procurement, they want 10% or 20% off because they get comped on it. So like, how do we make sure we're talking to the individuals and managing, especially today when power is distributed across an entire organization at times, and the buying process, nobody really wants to make a decision anymore. So it's like, if you're doing this, how do you keep track of all that? The value prompter helps me have a consistent view of each individual, prep for it, and diagnose it.
Let me add one thing that's really important. In the hotel business, everything is going to a bidding process through a non-disclosed third party.
Yep.
Like somebody calls up and says, we have an event, we need an RFP.
Yeah.
And every hotelier is frustrated by the fact that they have to deal with it on the basis of price. And I go into these hotels and I give them the same thing that we're talking about right now to be able to get to that CEO or whoever is responsible for the meeting. That's the deal. When that guy went to get the CEO, you just about shit in your pants, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
And you got there not on accident. You got there on purpose.
Yeah, that was the goal. I just didn't think it would happen that fast.
So when the lead comes into the hotel department, I say, listen, I would love to send you a proposal, but I'm not allowed to until I know what the outcome, the expected outcome of the meeting is. What do you want to have happen when these people go home?
Yeah.
And the person will not know the answer.
Right.
And you say, listen, if we have a 5-minute conversation with whoever is responsible for the outcome, I can send you a proposal that will blow you away, get accepted, and you'll be a hero.
Yeah. That's a technique that we call modus operandi. So this is the way we do business. I can't send you what you're asking me for until I get. So it's a combination of give to get, which everybody's heard before, but this is the standard way we do business. Like I know you want it, and I can blow you away with a proposal, but in order to do that, we all have bosses.
Yeah.
So we talked earlier about how like our salespeople out there don't want to do all this work, right? So I'm curious to know, to get your questions into the framework you guys have, how much prep time did you actually have?
So the way I break it down and the way I still today, because I am in essence a 100% commission sales rep. I mean, we sell it, do all the customization and execute it. Mm-hmm. I spend 15 minutes researching the industry, 10 minutes researching the company, and 5 minutes researching the person. And that's it. And it's that, it can be that simple. If you know what you're looking for and where to go, then it shouldn't take all day. Now, what happens is this lovely thing we call the internet, the digital distractions are a plenty. And this 15 minutes that you set aside to do research turns into 45 minutes because you've been watching cat videos, not because.
No. Hang on a second. There's another distraction, and that is the world now operates by logos. And
go a little deeper. I'm not sure I'm following you.
You research the company and you start looking at all their stuff and you see, wow, they're doing business with all these other people because I see all these other logos. I wonder why they bought this guy's stuff.
Right.
Because they want to brag about the logo.
Right.
They're all about having 2,800 logos up on their screen.
Oh, so yeah. Everybody's got NASCAR. We call them NASCAR slides. Everybody's got the NASCAR slides.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that you have to understand why this company bought from them in order to be able to really get deeper into the process. And I don't mind spending an extra few minutes trying to find out why is that logo up there? Why did these people buy from this company? What caused them to do it?
And that can definitely be part of your research cadence, no doubt. But it doesn't have to be. I mean, you find something really interesting that you really want to highlight, absolutely, spend a couple more minutes.
Yeah.
But if it's all about the focus. I mean, the focus is a big challenge. Even when we're doing workshops and doing these exercises in class, working on live accounts, I'll ask them, I'll say, okay, you got 15 minutes, go do your research. And then I'll say, all right, what'd you find? Well, I found this really cool little puppy video.
Yeah, right. No, here's the deal. The new word is mindset. The old word is focus, but the baseline word is concentration. Mm. If that person is willing to concentrate on this process, they can create the outcome that they're hoping for. If they lose their concentration because we are as a nation, we're diverted in 2 seconds by a text. The shit happens. Your kid texts you. You get a phone call from your Aunt Nellie, and you lose your concentration. When you lose, not focus, concentration, that breaks your thought process, and the salesperson, as a result, goes to the shiny object.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about your podcast. You have a podcast called the B2B Revenue Executive Experience.
Yep.
And why did you decide to start a podcast?
Yeah.
So I wish I could say I had some master plan, but the fact of the matter was, when I started the business, we needed quality content. But number one, I just like talking to people because it's the only way to continually expand my view of what's going on. I read all the time and all that, but it's the interactions. It's this. I'm learning as you guys learn. That to me is extremely valuable for me as a consultant, so I can continue to provide value to the organizations. Now, it turned into the number one, you know, lead generating source for us and all of this amazing content. But the only reason I continue to do it is I just like having the conversations. It's fun.
That's
and we let
awesome.
The guests kind of pick what they want to talk about. I can turn anything into a conversation about money.
Sure.
That's
or value.
Yeah. Or value without a doubt. So it's for me, it's an opportunity to also, we use it for lead gen. So we've had execs that are prospects for us come on as a way to provide them value, personal value before we ever get into a conversation.
Of course.
Something else.
So when our diehards go listen to your podcast, because we'll pop it in the show notes, what's the first episode that they should listen to?
Ooh, I would, if they're a football fan, we interviewed Todd Kavlich at the time. He was the CFO or CTO of the Minnesota Vikings. It's an early one, but that one's definitely entertaining. The beauty when
wait
we have
second,
the execs on.
Wait a second. Early one like the purple people eaters or early one
it's
like.
An early episode. It's an early episode.
I got
Todd
Kavlich. he's their current guy.
He was up until a few months ago. We interviewed him last year. But the thing about when we have people on, we have executives on, we ask two standard questions at the end of every interview. How does somebody who doesn't have a relationship with you, who has no trust, no referral in, capture your attention? How do you want to be contacted? So if anybody's trying to prospect into an account, they just gave you the information. And Todd Kavlich went into very explicit detail towards the end of that about what he expected when he picked up the phone. Highly entertaining. The other one I'd go to first would be, we spoke with Doreen Redis. She's the head of cybersecurity for IQPC. And she was, let's just say she was a little nervous. So the two of us might've done a couple of shots at Jack before we got.
Oh my goodness.
So it was fun. It was fun.
That's funny.
That's totally cool. But you ask really good questions, and I admire someone who actually asks a question, the answer to which might confirm a sale or at least move you along. Most salespeople do not know how to ask questions. It's probably the most limiting part of their sales lexicon.
Absolutely.
This has been amazing.
Yeah,
thank you for joining us. We're so glad you were here
today. I
hate
to tell you, but you're smart.
at least somebody's telling me.
Where should people find you when they want more after this episode?
The easiest place is LinkedIn. Don't just send me a blank connection. Put some freaking words in it because I won't look at it unless it's
got... Tell him how awesome he was on Seller Die, people. Go
exactly.
Connect with him.
You know... when I link with people, if they don't know me, it's not gonna happen. I just put link me.
Aren't there a lot of Chad Sandersons on LinkedIn?
Well, but only one that's as bald and beautiful as I am.
Oh, okay. So make sure you
actually look here. It'll look like this. I won't have my glasses on.
Oh my God!
Got it.
Like yeah.
Thank you.
You can also hit me at chad.sanderson@valueselling.com, or I'll even go one step further. My phone number is 303-834-5932.
We'll put that in the show notes.
Love it.
But let me tell
you
what. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you for being here.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, no, pleasure's ours.
We didn't even have to go Jersey on you.
Exactly. Another fantastic episode of Sell or Die is now in the books.
Let's let the listener be the judge of that.
You can be. Subscribe. Rate and review our show today. In fact, right now.
Or if that sounds too complicated, tell a friend.
Tell both your friends.
Because if you're not selling,
you're dying.
We're leaving.
Au revoir.
Shalom.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit sellordienetwork.com.